check 1, 2. Okay. The beloved also conjures these four passions of the soul and makes them cease and be calm insofar as he gives the bride in this state riches, strength, and satisfaction through the pleasant lyres of his sweetness and the siren song of his delight. He does this so that they may cease not only to reign in her, but also to cause her any displeasure. If previously the waters of sorrow over something reach the soul, especially concerning her own sins or those of others, since sin is what usually causes the most sorrow in spiritual persons, her grandeur and stability is now so great that even though she knows what these sins are, they do not produce sorrow or grief. She does not have compassion, that is, the feeling of compassion, even though she possesses its work and perfection. In this state, the soul lacks what is involved, weakness in her practice of the virtues, whereas the strength, constancy, and perfection of them remains. For the soul in this transformation of love resembles the angels who judge perfectly the things that give sorrow without the feeling of sorrow, and exercise the works of mercy without the feeling of compassion. Sometimes, however, and at certain periods, God calls her to feel things and suffer from them, that she might gain more merit and grow in the fervor of love, or for other reasons, as he did with the Virgin Mother, Saint Paul, and others. Yet in itself the state does not comprise these feelings of sorrow. Neither is she afflicted with the desire of hope, for being now satisfied in this union with God, insofar as is possible in this life, she has nothing to hope for from the world, nor anything to desire spiritually, for she has the awareness and experience of the fullness of God's riches. In life and in death, she is conformed to the will of God, saying in both the sensory and spiritual part, without the impulse of any other longing or appetite. Thus, her desire for the vision of God is painless. Neither do the emotions of joy, which usually caused her a feeling of possessing more or less, make her aware of less or added abundance, for what she ordinarily enjoys is so great that, like the sea, she neither decreases by the outflowing waters nor increases by the inflowing waters. For this is the soul in which is established the fount of whose waters, as Christ says through Saint Paul, John, leap up unto life everlasting, John 4:14. Because I asserted this, the soul does not receive anything new in this state of transformation, in which it seems that accidental joys are taken from her, which are not lacking, even in the glorified. It should be pointed out that even though these joys and accidental sweetnesses are not lacking, ordinarily they are numberless. They do not on this account add anything to the substantial spiritual communication. She already possesses everything that could come to her anew. Thus, what she possesses within herself is more than what comes to her anew. Hence, every time joyous and happy things are offered to the soul, whether they are exterior or interior and spiritual, she immediately turns to the enjoyment of the riches she already has within herself and experiences much greater gladness and delight in them than in those new joys. Thus, she in some way resembles God, who, even though he has delight in all things, does not delight in them as much as he does in himself, for he possesses within himself a good, eminently above all others. Thus all new joys and satisfactions serve more to awaken the soul to a delight in what she already possesses and experiences within herself than to new delights. For as I say, what she already possesses is greater than these. It is natural for a person, when something gives him joy or contentment, to turn his thoughts to an object he likes and esteems even more, and to rejoice and take pleasure in that object. Thus, what is accidental in these new spiritual joys is so little in comparison with the substantial good the bride already has within herself that we can call it a nothing. The soul that has attained this fulfillment, which is transformation, in which she has reached full stature, does not grow through these new spiritual things, and do others who have not arrived. Yet it is a wonderful thing to behold how, although the soul receives no new delights, it always seems to her that she receives them anew, and also that she has had them before. The reason is that she ever takes pleasure in them anew, since they are her good, that is, ever new. Thus it seems to her that she is always receiving new things without need. Yet, were we to desire to speak of the glorious illumination he sometimes gives to the soul in this habitual embrace, which is a certain spiritual turning toward her, in which he bestows the vision and enjoyment of this whole abyss of riches and delight he has placed within her, our words would fail to explain anything about it. As the sun shining brightly upon the sea lights up great depths and caverns and reveals pearls and rich veins of gold and other minerals, so the bridegroom, the divine son, in turning to the bride, so reveals her riches, that even the angels marvel and utter those words of the canticle, "Who is she that comes forth like the morning rising, beautiful as the moon, resplendent as the sun, terrible as the armies set in array?" Canticle 6:9. In spite of the excellence of this illumination, it gives no increase to the soul. It only brings to light what was previously possessed, that she may have enjoyment of it. Finally, the watching fears of night do not reach her, for she is now so clearly illumined and strong and rests so firmly in her God, that the devils can neither cause her obscurity through their darknesses, nor frighten her with their terrors, nor awaken her by their attacks. Nothing can reach or molest her now that she has withdrawn from all things and entered into her God, where she enjoys all peace and tastes all sweetness and delights in all delight. insofar as this earthly state allows. The wise man's words refer to the soul. The peaceful and tranquil soul is like a continual banquet. Proverbs 15:15. As one at a banquet enjoys the taste of a variety of foods and the sweetness of many melodies, the soul in this banquet, now received through her repose on the bosom of her beloved, enjoys every delight and tastes every sweetness. So little of this is describable that we would never succeed in fully explaining what takes place in the soul that has reached this happy state. If she attains the peace of God, which, as the Church says, surpasses all understanding will be inadequate and mute when it comes to explaining this peace. Verses from the second stanza follow. By the pleasant lyres and the siren song, I conjure you. We have already explained that by the pleasant lyre, the bridegroom refers here to the sweetness bestowed on the soul in this state. By it he causes the cessation of all the disturbances we mentioned. As the music of the lyres fills the soul with sweetness and refreshment, and so absorbs and suspends her as to keep her away from bitterness and sorrow, so this sweetness takes such an inward hold on her that nothing painful can reach her. These words are like saying, may all bitter things cease for the soul by means of the sweetness I place in her. We also said that the siren song signifies the soul's habitual delight. He calls this delight the siren song because, as they say, this song is so charming, it enraptures and enamors its hearer and makes him forget all things as though he were in a transport. Similarly, the delight of this union absorbs the soul within herself and gives her such refreshment that it makes her insensible to the disturbances and the troubles mentioned. These disturbances are referred to in this verse. He calls these troubles and disturbances of the inordinate passions and operations anger. To cease your anger. Just as anger is a certain impulse that troubles peace by going beyond its limits, so all the passions which we mentioned exceed by their movements the limits of peace and tranquility, and when they touch the soul, they cause disquietude. As a result, he says, and not touch the wall. By the wall, he refers to the enclosure of peace and the fence of virtues and perfections by which the soul is shut in and protected. For she is the garden mentioned above, which is enclosed and protected solely for the beloved, and among whose flowers he browses. In the canticle, he calls her an enclosed garden. My sister is an enclosed garden. Canticle 4:12. Thus he tells them here not to touch even the wall of his garden, that the bride may sleep in deeper peace, that she may delight more freely in the quietude and the sweetness she enjoys in her beloved. It should be known that there is now no door closed to the soul, but that it is in her power to enjoy this gentle sleep of love at will. As the bridegroom indicates in the canticle, I conjure you, daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and hearts of the fields, that you do not stir up or wake the beloved until she wishes. Canticle 3:5.